Now then, first I would like to thank the American section with its president, the president of TS in America, and the president, and the international president, Mr. Tim Boyd, to get me over here. So the subject I am going to share with you is not difficult, but it is at the same time difficult. We are really acquainted with paradoxes. So it is at the same time difficult and not difficult. Why? It is difficult if you want to be an expert. I will project a few PowerPoint images, and don't get panicked. Because you will see big names, big dates, and whatever. Don't pay attention to it. Because what I am aiming at is at the end, during the development of our sharing, you get to the point that everything which will happen in our life will add and help to the development of consciousness, and at the end will lead us to this tremendous, tremendous discovery, which is ourselves. So don't be panicked, don't be amazed, just take them as details, as sunset, sunrise, and then certainly I am sure that we have many experts among the audience. So please don't take into account small details of dates. When I show it to some students of philosophy, there is a kind of protestation saying, you say that, but it is exactly 5 years later. I said, well, I don't care, I don't mind. 5 years later, 5 centuries later, does not mind. Because what is really, it really is concerned is the development of our consciousness, our mind, okay? So you will find certainly many mistakes. Never mind. I am not an expert. You may be an expert. Forget about it. Okay? Because we are here to share understanding, not knowledge. The knowledge you can get, you have volumes, volumes, and how many megabytes you can read over internet. How many volumes you can buy at home. This is knowledge. But knowledge, I'm not going to share it with you, you are going to get it, right? Here is the sharing of my understanding. And I am not going to deliver to you the conclusion or the synthesis of that. You are going to do it. The job is yours. I just deliver to you on a plate. Here it is. Make whatever you want. Here's the flour, here's the fruit, here's the sugar. Make a cake of it. And it will be yours and not mine. I cannot share my cake to you. You're not going to like it. Okay? So it is a matter of individual understanding. What I can do is just to share what I have understood, and just up to you to make use of it. Okay? So then we are going to go to this adventure. So don't panic. First of all, before going there, I would say a few words about humanity. It is a very big word. We are part of it. What is a human? Do we know what a human is? You know that the total number of humans, which is around 7 billion of individuals over the planet. One of us, all of us, each of us, is part of it. But yet, you are not part of it. Why? Because you have touched upon the divine wisdom, which is quite different. Now we are going further. We're not going to conclude that you are above the others. Okay? So, the general definition of the human is a species called Homo sapiens sapiens, meaning that we know. We are apt to know, we are apt to learn. But more than that, the humans we are now is a special insight, a moment which is special. This moment is where matter and spirit reach the fittest proportion for evolution, meaning that we are no longer in a big proportion of matter. We are not yet in the big proportion of spirit. This is our dharma, our root. So there is a kind of, I would say, imbalance with advantage, a little bit advantage of the spirit, so that the whole thing could move and it should move. Now the moment is the beginning of the turning point. And this turning point, we are going to give evidence to it. And giving evidence to it, we have to go through our past. The past of thinking, the past of consciousness, how it has done to come so far to now, to Blavatsky's legacy, inheritance. But before going further, I would like to make another remark. The remark is about the brain and the soul, you see? With science, with modern science, this is a kind of tendency to think, not to say aloud, but to think that we are our brain, and the mind is the brain, the soul is the brain. So that when we die, everything will die with us. Finish. The brain will die, we die. Now, it is absolutely wrong, because the ancient wisdom says absolutely differently. Now, it is essential for us to distinguish the soul from the brain. The brain is just the seat of the soul, not more. And the identification of an individual with his or her brain indicates the materialistic paradigm of the thinking. These accept annihilation after death. And we know that after death, we still remain. Or you think perhaps we disappear for good? Let us vote. So anyhow, the disappearance of the body does not mean the disappearance of the individual consciousness, it is for sure. Otherwise, doubt will give us suffering about this chapter. Now in the esoteric instruction, HBB described the collapsing of some part of the brain just after death. I can indicate you to read those instructions. And this may suggest that something make use of it as long as the individual is alive and withdrew itself immediately after death, well before the collapsing of the other organs. So how can we deal with it? Since the body dies, we don't have any grip on whatever in the brain to have evidence about whatever. So, but it is not blind faith, because we are going to see it. I would say that at that stage of our sharing, I would say that the individual soul is the manifestation of consciousness linked with the one universal soul and assuming the ethical responsibility of the current incarnation. Just for this incarnation, it is there. Now, saying all this, I would like to warn all of us, we should avoid making of science a new fashionable religion. Because science is that modern science and discovery every day. Okay, what is this? These discoveries are just the result, the outcome of the work of the mind. And the mind is consciousness, you see? And all the outcome of science does not demonstrate that science is a new religion. It is us who decided wrongly. Why? Because the human mind has this drawback. You want to put in adoration whatever. A stone can be. You have I read all Krishnamurtis, he said, is that that you want to make something sacred and worship it? Just to go out and pick up a stone, bring home, and you worship it thrice a day. After some time, it turns to be sacred to you. It is not cynical, it is true. So, avoid making science a new fashionable religion. Science is a very, very good, great ally. And all the more it is now, it ceased to be a bantam cock, as the Mahatma letters call it, this bantam cock. But we need each other, because science will demonstrate few things, not all. The mystery of a human being can never be reached by science. So science cannot explain everything. Just because after the veil, any veil, there is another veil, always. It go like that, it goes like that. Therefore, constant moving forward is the way of avoiding dogmatism. And all of us know that the Theosophical Society was founded to avoid this, to avoid dogmatism, fanaticism. And dogmatism at a certain level can be considered as a curse for the mind, just like cursed. And true spiritual growth is to break through the tendency of crystallizing ideas which had been given as hypothesis of work and to move further. Now, saying all this as a kind of preamble, I will invite you to go to this adventure where there will be no panicking, no asking in details, but stick to the ideas of the currents of the thinkers. Just give me a minute. Okay. So, I have shared with you the introduction, what is humanity, the brain and the soul, and avoid making science a new fashionable religion. Now we are going to a voyage within terrestrial time. Why terrestrial? Because the dates will be in year or centuries, but not millennia or eons. So it is very, very terrestrial. Now let us have. The first thing is the philosophy in the chronology, and I will give some comments on it. I hope that I will respect time, otherwise we will overlap with the second session next. So then the real concern is to hint to the constant modification of thinking and evolution of consciousness. So no consideration of the details. We come to the rest later on. Just now stick to the philosophy in its chronology and comments. You will see that we start very recently. It is minus something, but it is nothing. With the age of the earth, of the age of the universe, and the age of the soul, it's nothing. Minus 2009, it is all approximative, because I would challenge who will bring the truth to say it is not minus 1,000, 2,000, 900, and instead 2,950. So please spare us with this, okay? So then minus that, you have what we call now the I Ching, but originally it is called Yi Qing. The Yi Qing in Chinese means moving, muting, transforming. The book of transformation or mutation. We come back later if we have time. So it is the legend says that it is revealed by some mystical emperor. There's a mistake here. This is a mistake of writing. It is Fu Xi. It is H S I. It is the reverse. Anyhow, so at 1,000 later you have the Vedas. The Vedas based on revelations, rituals, etc. And then the first Vedic Puranas came when we don't know. I mean, you ask the scholars, they will give you a date. You ask another scholar, they give another date. So I put a question mark. It is surer to ask questions instead of confirming. So later on, you can see the caste system in India is a little bit later, applying the two trend of thinking. So following this, you have Moses, and then Judaism, then Upanishads. This is the big chapter. 108 Upanishads. You don't have to read all of them. 8 or 9 would be sufficient to understand. And 8 or 9, you can also read the shortened versions and get the gist of it, but not all the words. So, okay, we move on. And then later on, you will see Lao Tse in China with the Tao Te King. Tao Te King is a big chapter also. It is still molding the Chinese mind. Please, if you have not read one of the Upanishad and the Tao Te King, please rush to the bookshop, buy them and read it until the next when we meet, okay? Because they are basic for our learning. So let us move a little bit further. You see Gautama the Buddha in India, and then at almost at the same time you have the Presocratic and the Neoplatonist. Yeah? So this, the next one, is for minor. You see, I have put in parallel the things. You have the Vedas, Vedantas, meaning the end of the Vedas, meaning the precursor of Upanishads. And then later on, you have 6 darshanas. You have the 6 philosophies of India. We don't have the time to go into it, but let us know that yoga is one of them. So then, Gautama, the Buddha, and Nahakshuna. This is big name, don't forget, please. You forget everything, but for the consciousness development, keep Nahakshuna. And on the other side, this side is from India, the other side is from China. So you have the Yi King, I Ching, Dao Ji King, or the Tao Te King. The Peking system of writing is driving people mad, because instead of saying Tao Te King, they changed Dao De Jing. And well, if you enter some encyclopedia, you can find 2 ways. So there's no risk. Now then, I want to say a few words about Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu is meant to be the author of Tao Te King, mythically speaking. I don't know whether he has a real historical existence, but some legends say that he disappeared through a gate in China after giving this Tao Te King to the guardian of the gate. Well, this is legend. Now, more historical is Chuang Tzu, and this I will not miss to talk about Chuang Tzu. This is real big figure, and we have to come to it, because Chuang Tzu does not follow the philosophy of in a very orthodox way. He say one thing and he said this thing does not exist. I am talking to you, but be sure that it is not real. And as I'm a friend of Chuang Tzu, I would say the same to you. I'm going to share with you things, but don't believe in it. They are just words. Make use of it, go beyond it, and we are friends. Otherwise, we will quarrel. You say that, I think that, we have concluded that, and it is just words. Chuang Tzu has something, it's a genius. This is famous, his dream. One day, Chuang Tzu dreams to be a butterfly. In the dream, Chuang Tzu is a butterfly. And when he woke up, he said, I'm wondering, was it Chuang Tzu dreaming to be a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming to be Chuang Tzu? This is called the uncertainty of things. You cannot be sure. When you're sure of this, you are sure also that you are wrong. Don't be sure. There's some literature, very recent, dealing with something as blessed uncertainty or something. And it is true. Remaining in the state of mind without being certain of things is a blessed position of the mind. So I really invite you to read Chuang Tzu, and Thomas Merton has collected quite a lot of quotations from him. And this is very famous in the 80s. It is the literature of what we call the post-revolutionary in France. People should read it, and then they lose the certainty of things. Then another name, big name, is Confucius. You know that Confucius is one of the biggest philosophers of humanity, of China, and America, the United States of America, has a society based on the teachings of Confucius without you knowing it. Because it is an ordered society, respective of laws, respective of the value of work and effort. And in that sense, Confucius joined completely what the Vedas were chanting, bless his effort, bless his effort, bless enterprise, and bless his effort. And this, with Confucius, it is realized, and the American society, USA, is based on this model. Respect of order, take care of the family before governing the country and before bringing peace to the world. This is Confucius. Now next to it is Mencius. He's one of the, I would say contemporary, but with Mencius, morality became codified. So it is very politicized, and it is kind of when you slip into politics, you don't know where you go. Yeah, so Mencius, Manzi or Mencius, started very well, and his continuators make it a mess. Well, anyhow, we go back to this, and we say here, which is the pre-Socratic and then Neoplatonicism, we will go up. And now we have this almost at the same time, minus something, circa, before. You have Pythagoras. All of you know about this, right? I'm not going to stay much time on it. Pythagoras, Xenophanes, Parmenides or Parmenides, I don't know how you pronounce it. Parmenides. Parmenides, yes, Parmenides. And then Socrates, Plato, who don't know this name? Everyone in the West should have heard once. If not, then run to somewhere and buy a book. At least, yes, in the bookshop. And then afterwards, Aristotle. You said big names. And then we would remain on this Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, more. But let us know that Plato, before becoming the disciple or the student of Socrates, he has followed Parmenides before, because the three together have a common idea. The idea is that consciousness is one, and we cannot divide things. Let me bring back something. He held that the multiplicity of existing things, their changing forms and motions, are but an appearance of a single eternal reality, being. So then Socrates, later on, said that who once observed that the unexamined life is not worth living. I'm not going to ask the next question. He said, the unexamined life is not worth living. And then Plato, to make a resume of it, I would shorten many things. Plato envisioned a systematic, rational treatment of the forms and their interrelations, starting with the most fundamental among them, the good, the one,
the good, the one, ethics and moral psychology, etc. And let us be remembered that there is a small story related in the resume of the first part of the Secret Doctrine. He says Plato was asked, what will remain is when everything will be dissolved in the universe, everything dissolved. You, I, your friend, your best friend, your husband, your children, dissolved, nothing. What remains? He said, goodness. Only goodness remains. And this very simple answer will lead us with more understanding. He is joining what the Buddhist metaphysicians claim, that the fundamental basic of the universe is compassion, karuna. And compassion is just goodness, is it? But goodness in action. So you see traditions join together like that. So, not going to go further for that. Let us go. You are still awake? Yes? So let us go a little bit. You see Confucius, we have talked, and in India, this is the age of Mahabharata. This is a big thing. Mahabharata, you may say, well, okay, nobody can read the big things of that. But you have a small resume of it in the Bhagavad Gita. It is a piece of jewel. When you read it, you have inside consciousness, the mind, the dialogue between yourself and your instructor, the inner teacher. It is sublime when answering to Arjuna, Krishna says, you ask me who I am. I am the thunder and the lightning. I am all, you see a list of things after all the slokas. And at the end he said, I am the splendor of the splendid. I am the splendor of the splendid. You got it? There's something vibrating inside. We can understand and we can appreciate the splendid. Okay, it is outgoing, it is positive. Everyone can understand that. But can we feel the splendor of the splendid? When you reach to that, you are reaching the returning point. This is the point of the U-turn, okay? But we come back, because I'm not talking about the U-turn of the former Prime Minister of UK, Mrs. Thatcher, in the 80s. She said, you want to turn if you want, you turn, but I don't. This is the answer of Mrs. Thatcher to the miners, if you can remember this. But this U-turn, this is not that. This is a U-turn. I will explain a little bit more later on. So then, you see Mahabharata, meaning Bhagavad Gita, and Ramayana is a late, it is, I would say, minor in our conversation here. And at the same time, almost, Shankaracharya with Vivekachudamani. Vivekachudamani, if you don't have the time or the wish to read 9 Upanishads, just take this, Vivekachudamani, and you have the gist of the main Upanishads. Because the legend, I think it is brother history, says that Shankaracharya used to be a disciple of Patanjali, and this is the way of teaching in the East. The East take the reverse, or rather, the West take the reverse of the East. And after some time of learning, serving the teacher, the disciple is asked to write a resume of what he has understood. You see, it is not like PhD now with very, sorry, you have many PhD here, so you have the whole merit. But I would say that, mean that after years and years of trying to understand, you have to rewrite the whole thing. Yeah? And With Patanjali, Shankaracharya learned the Upanishads. What does it mean, Upanishad? Upanishad means at the feet of the master. You sit there and you listen. And then, after that, he rewrites, and Vivekachudamani is just a small book. Please read it. And I will promise you that you advance spiritually immensely. This is the carrot. Okay, so then read it because it is really inspiring, profoundly inspiring. And at a certain time, you can meet with yourself at a certain time. So then we go ahead. This is just to mention, this is Mahavira Jainism. This is stern morality, strict integrity, and cleanliness in life. And then after that, you have this Buddhism expanding in India with Ashoka, the great emperor, who decreed that Buddhism should be the religion of the state. Okay, we go a little bit further. So then, we come now to our era, Jesus Christ. It is perhaps more known to us. And then Buddhism appears in China with this immense figure, Narayana. The human mind has made a leap, tremendous leap, with Narayana. He's the one first who promulgate neither nor. No this one, no this one. Meaning that one has to take the mind in the between, never take stand yes or no, yes or the opposite. It is called the way of Madhyamaka. You see, the Madhyamaka is here, written. Madhyamaka. The doctrine of the middle way. It is not lukewarm. It is very, very difficult. It is, you don't fall neither in skepticism nor in dogmatism. You keep your way in the middle, because in the middle always you can move forward. And Madhyamaka here, sometimes and very often you will see Madhyamika, but I have been told by an expert that Madhyamaka is the doctrine and Madhyamika is the follower of the doctrine. Well, anyhow, it is a detail. So then, all this, this is important now. In the first council of Nicaea, only there that the dogma of Catholicism was defined, meaning that all the Christian people believe now was defined there, meaning after the death of Christ, of Jesus. Meaning it is a little bit further, right? And then all the development of this, you will see that Buddhism was prosecuted in India, and then it is a catastrophe for India, but it is a catastrophe somewhere. It turned out to be a blessing somewhere else. It is the way it is in life. So because of this prosecution, Bodhidharma went to China. Here, Bodhidharma is a big name. He is the first patriarch of Chong Buddhism, meaning Mahayana Buddhism, Chong Buddhism is come from Bodhidharma. Okay? So then, after that, all these we can go and then quickly and then just to see what happens in there. You have this now. The rebirth of Brahmanism in India and decline of Buddhism in India, and then Buddhism flourished in Chan Buddhism in China, and after that it was exported to Japan and all this region, and also the fusion of Buddhism in the Bong religion of Tibet and give now the Tibetan branch of Buddhism. Well, what else? You are not tired. You are still awake. Okay, so all this, you see, all this meaning that it is what is important to see, you see how consciousness has been driven from this, the thinking, the beliefs, etc. And then all the, you see, there is also the important here is that the East-West schism of Christianity. Now on, you will have this Orthodox religion of Christianity, the one with the priest, with the robe, almost burned by Madame Blavatsky baptism. Remember this? This is, but it is coming to that. And then you have the Mongols also invading China and Gen in Japan. All this is the whole world, right? And the conquest of Genghis Khan, what is the big chapter? He came up to the threshold of Europe at that time. Yeah, and then Rumi, yeah, there is a contestation, the protestation that Rumi didn't found anything. I said, well, leave it. You know that Rumi exists and Dervishes exist, and that's it. And then the birth of Buddhism. And then the big thing, very big, is the reform of Tsongkhapa in Tibet. With a group of American friends, we have visited Tibet sometime in the past, and we have visited the vestiges of Tsongkhapa, right? In the valley of Tsigatse, well known to our theosophical literature. And also, the big, big thing is that Tsongkhapa is a great reformer. In the system of Lamaism in Tibet, you can still marry, you can still drink wine, you can still eat meat, and you remain a Lama. Because you know the doctrine, you know how to lead a ritual. Now, after Tsongkhapa finished, you want to be a Lama, you abstain from drinking beer, you abstain from eating meat, you abstain from doing magics to call for the weather, better weather, or to curse your neighbors if they are not kind to you. Finish all this, okay? And you cannot take wife if you want to go to Tsigatse to remain in the silence of a metaphysical retreat. So Tsongkhapa is the great reformer. After him, this is a kind of purification of Tibetan Buddhism. Now, next to us, you know more than me on the names. Afterwards, I named there Martin Luther, the Reformation of Christianity. Okay, big, big turmoil of that at that moment. But it turned out that we have Protestantism, and America is under the influence of this, and not Catholicism, no longer. Then after that, you have the discovery of America, the continent, and at the same time, this is a big one, you have a debate in Valladolid debate, a town in Spain, where big expert, high rank in the Catholicism system, they debate. And finally, they concluded that the locals, the colored people, can be used, exploited as slaves. There's a big film, you can reach it by internet, called The Debate of Valladolid, where at the end, you can see that within the seriousness of debate, of theology, of philosophy, of whatever, and you can see all the fakeness of it to come to the conclusion you can use the colored people as slaves to your commerce and your business. It's terrifying how you can use the language to exploit human beings, your fellow members of the community of humans. Okay, so let us move a little bit more. This is the last one, huh? And we go a little bit further. But then you can see that there's something moving. Consciousness is moving. You have John Calvin, Jean Canvin, who is the reformer of the Protestantism, and this will lead to the Church of Presbyterianism. But then the big one is the French Revolution. The French Revolution, I think that everyone knows about it, even not being French person, French citizen. It is the big thing because there's some link with our society. One of the masters of the society called Le Comte de Saint-Germain, Prince de Racoxy, who struggled of his all energy, etc., to prevent this because he believed in royalty to have a system, political system, as parliamentary as in England. But he failed. He failed. Meaning that it is not that when you have wisdom that you have to want to win. There's some forces in the universe we can turn in such a way that with all your energy, all your wisdom, you cannot win a cause. So then revolution took place. And what? This is an interesting thing. What? The French Revolution is here. Very, 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 very close to it, Karl Marx. It is like a trend of consciousness. You see, going the same way. And I will take a kind of window to show it to you. You can see, take it into account. This is the three things go together, huh? Okay? So then, so you see the context when Blavatsky is born, was born. You can see that here is Blavatsky's birth, right? Here is the foundation of the tears, meaning a new consciousness, and the release of the secret doctrine, and then Achmibi's death, and Krishnamurti's. Now, surrounding it, you can see Karl Marx, the author of The Capital, then Friedrich Engels, to go together, the two. Why go together? Simple. Karl Marx is the inventor of the system, communism. Friedrich Engels is the seller of the doctrine. Without Engels, Marxism will never flower. It is because of Engels. But philosophically speaking, you will see all this. You will see at the same time Henri Bergson. He is the pope of intuition, the French philosopher. And the two names you must know a little bit more, John Dewey and Bertrand Russell. And all this is very good. But then at the end here, they form a kind of a circle of expert thinking about positivism, about logics and logical positivism, and logical empiricism. And then this circle of Vienna in the 1920 was flowering up to a point that 9 years later, it ends up in a wall because they discuss between experts about logics, about positivism. They end up in the conclusion that they have to find out a philosophy to end all philosophies. Okay. So, you see that, happily, this circle was disbanded under the political pressure of the World War II. And all the names are now out of the circle of Vienna. So we say that all this is this not to find, to show the historical side of what? It is just to show that consciousness is moving all the time. Since the time we can spot it out from the beginning, it is really very recent, and it is that it is okay. You can see the surrounding of Blavatsky's at that time, meaning that she's not a kind of coming from the blue like that. She's a kind of not consequence, but she was born in the context, and we have to take into account this context. So as a kind of very temporary conclusion, we can say that the background of thinking when the Secret Doctrine was released in 1888, it is materialism. It is Karl Marx, it is Engels, it is all materialistic trend. And now, contemporary, now, till now, meaning that this will continue, the philosophy of logics turns out to be crashing into absurdity. I mean that the mind, the human consciousness is now in a despair, thinking what? Coming back to the pre-Socratic and the things? No, it cannot move. It has moved, but it moved in a deadlock and crash against the wall of absurdity. So then this is on the field of philosophy. Now the society at that time of Blavatsky, society turned out to be just consumerism, and now we turn out to be global greed. Global greed. Not the greed of some people, but global. Everyone wants more. And the ethics at that time, Blavatsky, is reduced to Christian morality. Please don't misunderstand me. I don't mean that Christian morality is wrong. No, it is not wrong at all. It is very good, but it is limited. This is why Madame Blavatsky talked about bigotry. See, all the moralities at that time turned out to be bigotry. So this is the context of that time. So what? Foundation of the Theosophical Society. You think that it is haphazard? No, nothing happened haphazardly. It came there in the picture right from the moment. At the moment, materialism is rampant, greed, absurdity of logics, finished. I mean, the mind is in the deadlock. So what to do? The Theosophical Society came to the picture, founded. You know all this better than me. And on the top of it, Colin Olcott unifies Buddhist movements, because the Buddhist trend, they are not disciplined. They are freedom of thinking, freedom of things. So Colonel Olcott helped them to have at least a flag. Know that here is the flag of Buddhism, okay? Well, I hope that they are not still quarreling, but at least they have a flag. But he traveled north, south, east, west to do it in Sri Lanka, and always the men, the masters, cannot find a second one. Who can we find, says one of the masters, who can we find a man like Olcott, eating anything, sleeping anywhere, traveling with any means, just wearing in his mind the work and the duty. So this is the type of individuals that is needed two more to maintain the TS alive. This is true, three. Okay, so then the last one, of course, Jiddu Krishnamurti. Why I put it last? Not historically speaking. It is on the trend of the evolution of consciousness. Look, first, theosophy was not given for intellectual satisfaction. When you read something illuminating in the Secret Doctrine or somewhere, you say, oh wow, I feel great, as a million, I'm going to have a good tea to compensate that, right? And then it is given for intellectual satisfaction. You have the right to be satisfied, but it is not given for that. Two, the past trend of positivism should be avoided. What is that? Positivism is that you just have the sermon of Blavatsky. the ground, the globe, the circle, et cetera, et cetera. This is the way, positivist way of expounding theosophy. This past trend of positivism should be avoided or surpassed. Three, one shouldn't try to convert anyone. Instead, by working on one's own mind, one remolds the collective mind. You think that you are your mind? It is my mind? No. We are talking now with one mind. This is why you understand something. The same thing, same time, then I understand. Otherwise, it will be sliced and no communication possible. It's one mind. And then this, one should try, shouldn't try to convert and work on one's own mind. Four, uncertainty should be kept in mind. Whenever you want to confirm something, say to yourself, wait a minute, what is that? Five, thinking by oneself is indispensable, using reason to move beyond reason by learning refutation. Refutation is brought by Jiddu Krishnamurti. During many decades, we profess theosophy. You say, this is wonderful, marvelous. Who will protest something? And who will say, wait a minute, how are you sure? How you can be so sure? Nobody dare to say that. Here's the man coming, the hand in the pocket, seeming knowing nothing, but is it not true? Okay? So then he refuted many things. He said, the masters, he's not against, but just reconsider it. Okay? So we have to learn the art of refutation. And this is Nagarjuna, the first one to our knowledge, who brought it and who, and this refutation art is now developed in Krishnamurti's way of teaching. Six, imaginative faculties to be used to conceive. Remember the meditation diagram of Blavatsky? First conceive unity with expansion in space and infinite in time. Conceive, learn to conceive and not repeat. This is one of the biggest faculty of the human mind, conceive, okay? This is the step we have to take now and not going on and on repeating things. So imaginative faculty is to be used to conceive. Seven, and last, intelligence and intuition are two superior faculties to be used and developed for moving onward and forward. We have many things. Socrates, we have Aristotle, we have who else? We have the Bible, we have Bhagavad Gita, we have all this. All this has molded our mind. But for what? We're not going to enjoy this. Only, yes, perhaps you can be rich, you can have full of your time, you can enjoy it, it is your right. No, there's nothing wrong in it, but there's a way, better way of moving forward. This is that. Intelligence and intuition are two superior faculties to be used and developed for moving forward and onward. Now I will conclude with this one. The revolutionary aspect resides in the fact that the human mind, as a totality, the human mind, endowed by intuition, is now able to act on itself, to bring about a drastic change of its own content. It can act on its own content. It can then discover its capacity to reach infinity. Infinity is our aim. So it can then discover its capacity to reach infinity, which is its own true nature. We are infinite. Do you realize that? If you have not, conceive it. We are infinite. So the capacity to reach infinity, which is its own true nature, it matters little that infinity is called elsewhere emptiness. This is just a question of technical terminology, so don't quarrel about it. We are infinity, and also emptiness. Because we are emptiness, that we are infinity. So realize it, and we will share the next session about a little bit more about that. This is just to lead you in this adventure, very shortened, because since minus 3,000 years up to here, we have 1 hour and 2 minutes to do. So congratulations, not to have fallen into sleep.